Welcome to the Learning Well podcast, where we take learning seriously, but not ourselves.
Welcome to episode one of the Learning Well podcast. I'm your host, Miriam Taylor. And as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Lana Jobson and Jerry Zanstra. So I'd like to start our inaugural podcast here by digging into four key topics that impact our industry. In fact, in my mind, and I don't know what you two think, but if these four concepts aren't well understood and applied in our industry, I feel like we are going to lose a lot of ground in the next few years. Like, they're really critical to our industry. And those are learning science, their creativity, their technology, their data, measurement, analytics. Like, those four topics are super critical.
You couldn't have started with something a little lighter.
Right, I know.
Okay.
We promised to have fun, and we're starting with learning science.
We're the Learning Well, so we are going to dive deep.
We are diving deep today, but we also have Lana with us. Lana's going to make sure we stay practical.
All right.
Perfect. So it turns out, I mean, obviously the word learning science has been around for a while, but as we were prepping for this show, the reason that we have chosen to kind of use the word learning science is that it's important to design instruction for the whole person, not just the sort of pedagogical aspects of it, but everything that comes into play when we expect somebody to learn something. Even that word, expect somebody to learn something, that's a loaded word too. So, well, the interesting thing was is that as I was doing some research, I discovered that we probably co-opted this word a little bit. So the science of learning recognizes that many sciences inform our understanding of how people learn. And the science of learning is kind of this interdisciplinary field of study, and it's used in our L&D industry to improve talent management, performance improvements, organizational learning, instructional design. But kind of to the point, we promised to have episodes that are to the point and not too long. Our goal today isn't to lock down the exact eight learning sciences. The goal here is to discuss at least five or six of them that we feel are really important.
And there's so much overlap.
It's very
difficult to even define them separately and not express that overlap.
Exactly. So in fact, the first two, neuroscience and cognitive science. So as I was reading, there was quite a lot of overlap. And I have in my head this probably inappropriate, but image of neuroscientists and cognitive scientists like duking it out in the hallway in their white coats, like,
yeah, that's not much of a fight.
Right. I hate to go there, but there is a lot of overlap. So absolutely, Lana.
But I think too, if you've ever had a really good teacher, so for me, Mrs. Brown in the third grade understood brain science. She understood cognitive science. She understood psychology, right? I mean, the technology there was pretty much just those film strip things.
Well, that's...
Right, but yeah. I mean, back in the day, it was cool.
Better than green chalkboard.
Yeah, but a great teacher thinks about the whole person. Mm-hmm. And if you think back on the best teacher you had, you knew was engaged with you at different levels. So there's many of us have already had this experience. It's just, we're going to talk about why.
Exactly. Like, our goal right now is really to go through these different areas of learning science, but again, relying on Lana, who is always going to ask us.
Oh, I'll keep you practical. Right. We'll make sure.
Right. The great so what question. Like, why does that really matter? Yeah, so neuroscience obviously focuses on really the chemical and electrical changes in the brain. And that's, I think, a bit of a key difference from cognitive science, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But this is actually was key for me understanding the impact even on phones or social media. That's just like a small example. But as your brain is processing and it comes in through, content comes in through your senses, it goes to the back of your brain, really to the sensory lobes in the back. And then from there, they decide, well, where are we sending this? And they create these pathways to different lobes. Well, if what you just took in is interrupted by a text message, is interrupted by Snapchat or a YouTube video, that pathway never really gets carved. And in this case, I'm thinking of particularly K-12 education. But you know what? It happens to adults all the time. We think we multitask. We do not multitask. Right. And so
Not at all.
Right.
I can do one thing. That's it.
Right. And my apologies to neuroscientists everywhere, because that was like the most simplified version ever. But it's creating pathways in the brain that reinforce learning.
Would you include things like dopamine in this and cortisol? So if I'm having a really great learning experience, I think it's probably, or would you put that in cognitive? Would it stay inside neuroscience?
It would stay inside neuroscience. So neuroscience focuses on biology, like the neuro and chemical perspective. So yeah. You're talking about chemicals.
Yeah, I'm talking about chemicals. Right, I've had this great experience and I learned so much. And other times I had a really lousy experience and big surprise. I didn't really learn anything.
I don't want to do it. Right. Absolutely.
Or I don't want to do it again.
Right. Right. So even relating to that, maximum comprehension happens when we're focused, we're using all of our senses and our lobes, and we also have those chemical situations going on where I'm enjoying this experience, which again is why we've kind of made that move to the word learning experience.
Right. Yep.
And that's a good picture that we are talking about the whole person. It's the senses, it's the emotions and how we're feeling about it, and it's the chemicals in our brains, and it all goes into that learning experience.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's kind of obvious in this case, like, what does that mean for us? Like the so what? Like, we've already nailed it. I mean, if you're not really thinking about the whole person, you're not designing a learning experience that's going to be effective.
Do you think sometimes people that are designing a learning experience, the goal is to design a learning experience? You know what I mean? So you can get to the next one.
Mark it off. You've done that.
You check it off. Where's that? You're moving on and... I wonder if a little bit of pause, even picturing in your head, who at the end of the day is actually going to experience this thing that I'm creating, what motivates them? What, you know, if you actually thought about, the person, the whole person in that learning experience, you might approach what you build quite differently.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, we spend a lot of time talking in our industry about personas, but sometimes I think that can still just be an exercise.
I agree. Yeah.
I mean, it's just one step there, but I think that's where learning, myself included, like obviously I'm still learning about all these different areas of science, but it's increasingly helping me focus on the whole person and think through those things.
A persona is always a generalization.
It is,
I guess
absolutely.
What I'm arguing for is what if you thought about a human being? A person, not a persona, an actual person. What are all the other things you're competing with in that person's brain? What else is going on? What stress is at home? And what, like you say, what's flashing on your screen and what's beeping at you? And what, you know, how do you get the person to focus their brain, which takes some work?
Yeah, absolutely. And that, again, that really plays into the second learning science, which is cognitive science. So the focus there, Jerry, and you were kind of getting at the difference there. Cognitive science studies memory, language, reasoning, attention. So they play together, right? Because if these chemicals are going in my head and I'm like, I'm motivated, I'm going to pay more attention. And if I'm not motivated, I'm just going to forget. We've all seen people go through the motions.
Well, and you think of, again, back to your own education, there are certain learning experiences that stuck with you for a particular... So back to Mrs. Brown, she could have just told us about an assembly line in Henry Ford and I wouldn't have remembered any of it. But she made a contest where there was one group of half of the class was making peanut butter sandwich and jelly sandwiches individually and the other half was making them in a production line. We way outproduced them. That was third grade.
That's awesome.
Right? Yeah. That was roughly 50 years ago. 40, 50, yeah. Well,
anyway.
Okay, there you go. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Never mind. I meant 30 years ago. But that stuck. And you know, all of those things came together, right? That language and memory and reasoning and attention. And we were manipulating things. It was wonderful.
I think those early lessons stick with us. And so we... For our listeners, you're probably going to hear a lot of stories, but also Jerry is illustrating an excellent point, which is if you walk away with nothing else today, you will most likely remember the peanut butter and jelly assembly line story because we learn by telling stories and hearing stories.
But yeah, for sure.
I digress.
Oh, I plan on digressing a lot. Yeah, Miriam knows me well, so does Lana.
So we can go ahead and move on to the next two, but I think the point here is that there's a whole field of cognitive behavior therapy, which there's a big emphasis in the learning and development field on changing behavior at mm-hmm. times. And we can do all the learning experiences we want, but if we're not changing behaviors, if that's one of the goals and objectives, I mean, cognitive science is where we have to spend some more time digging into that to make sure that we really understand how to change that behavior. So Lana, I know this is kind of your passion here. So talk us through psychology and why this is really important.
Yeah, psychology actually is what I did my undergraduate study in. And psychology is the study of how people think, feel, and behave. So basically, we're talking about how people are interacting with their environment. And I mean, the carryover into learning, I think, is fairly obvious. But we want to be able to impact what people are thinking about, how they're feeling about the learning experience, and then for sure impacting their behavior. But one of the questions, so here I'm going with one of my questions.
Okay.
One of the questions that we really want to ask is this truly a learning problem? Or is there some kind of psychological something else that is stopping the behavior? I mean, is it maybe your manager isn't on board and you're afraid of the repercussions there? Is it that the new process is going to take too much time? I mean, like, there could be a whole number of things that are stopping this behavior, and it may not be a learning problem with a learning solution. So I think that's a really critical question to ask early on. Like, what else in the psychological realm could be making an impact here?
Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could isolate just
the
learning?
Yeah, right.
But that learning is taking, and again, it ties into your next topic. It's tying into where the person is as an individual and where they are collectively, right? So what am I thinking right now, and what are the people around me thinking and doing?
Mm-hmm.
That is all going to change how I experience learning and what the result might be. And I've appreciated your thinking on that, because I know you've done a lot of thinking about kind of that culture of learning that we often, and I'm sure we'll be talking about in future episodes. But if you're missing that, if you're missing the psychology part and you're missing the sociology part, my goodness, you're missing an important swath.
Yeah, that's for sure. And another aspect of the psychology is how much freedom are learners given to practice, which implies make mistakes.
Oh yeah, failure.
People are really afraid of failing. Mm-hmm. And if we don't have that culture of learning, just like Jerry was talking about, where it's okay to practice, it's expected that you're going to make some mistakes early on and fix them fast and move on and get better. Then that could be a big impediment to learning. So just some things to think about from a psychological standpoint.
So the part of the psychological perspective is fear itself. If you exist in a context of fear, all sorts of things are going to go sideways versus confidence.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I still remember very early on, Jerry, I'm guessing you might not even remember this, but we had a conversation about approach to take with a learning program we were making. And there's two ways you can do it, but your approach was to throw people in the deep end of the pool in scenarios, let them mess it all up, and then afterwards help them through what went wrong and why it went wrong. And I'm sitting over here very risk averse. I'm like, that sounds terrible. Like, no, we need to teach them what they need to know and then let them practice. But both are very valid approaches.
I think that's how my parents taught me to swim. I think they literally did throw me in the deep end of a pool and say, well, you figure it out or you won't. Right. So,
but that speaks to, and those are both valid approaches.
Yeah,
but it's the psychology of, you know, the learning that we're designing there.
And then you've already mentioned a second one that goes hand in hand with psychology is sociology. And this is how people function within their groups or teams or societies within the context of those social structures. And for a learning and development professional, this is a critical question. Like, how are the relationships and the community dynamics, what impact are they having on your learning? Are you allowing for peer-to-peer discussion? I mean, Jerry already talked about how valuable discussion is to learning. So just thinking about, just stopping for a moment as you're designing your experience and considering how you can bring in the social structures to enhance that learning is a really critical thing.
And recognizing the variety. So if you're developing a learning experience for the 300 people that are all live within 10 miles of you versus three continents and 25 countries, right? And you think of the difference. For instance, you know, am I in a shame-based culture?
Right,
am
absolutely.
I in an individualistic culture? So it's that very much, and I think psychology is the same way. You're not very careful to be a one-size-fits-all assumption about what is motivating people inside of a group to learn in a particular way.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
That's some of the fun work that we've done is, okay, it's not just everybody says, well, it's localization and translation.
No.
No, it's way beyond that. And if you're not thinking about the sociology, I'm not going to say you're making a mistake, but you're going to miss some good opportunities.
Well, Lon and I had that very early on. One of our most eye-opening experiences was a group of people in a different culture, and they weren't, quote, learning it, according to the company, and so they sent us there. And the first thing we discovered is this is a society that's very collaborative, very social-based, and the first thing they did when they were hired was sit them all down in front of individual computers and do online learning. And we're like, this is not a learning problem. This is a sociology problem at this point.
Very much.
But that was a great lesson for me to learn. So Lana, I feel like we sort of usurped your so what as you're giving us. We're answering for you, which is probably not very fair. Anything else you want to tell us about why sociology is really important to consider, or should we just move on?
Well, there's one more piece that to me personally, this is where I get very passionate about my job, and that's being able to find allow each person in your organization to find their niche so that they understand where their spot is, where they're valuable. And this can happen so well with the learner journey and mapping out for them so they know exactly where they're headed, what they need to do, what value they're bringing, and just really be able to find their spot. Because I get passionate about it because that's where you get the satisfaction in your job, and that's where you gain your confidence. And I mean, if we can help do that, that is an amazing, amazing work.
Yeah, absolutely. And we can hear the passion in your voice as you're, that comes right through. So I love talking about the learning journey. That's really important. Two other learning science pieces here that I think honestly are not maybe considered as often, and maybe sometimes they don't need to be. But one of them is linguistics. And that's obviously the study of language, its structure, how we use it, syntax, grammar, the context in learning. But the interesting thing with that is the average American reads at a seventh or eighth grade reading level. You know, according to the AMA, medical information should only be written at that level. And I know that good learning and development professionals do take time to consider who is their learner, what level are they at, or do we have, you know, English is not first language learner, or whatever their first language is, age group, potentially other demographics, education level.
Health,
absolutely. But I still think there's more to it than that, which is even like the complexity of the sentences and how they're written, storytelling. And that's a little spoiler alert. We are going to spend probably several episodes talking about storytelling.
Oh, good.
So absolutely. Right. But I think maybe linguistics is something I just wanted to call again to our attention, because I think we scratch the surface, but sometimes we really forget to take a deeper look at linguistics and how we're writing things and the tone and inclusiveness and how we're writing it, the examples that we're using, they really reflect the people that we're working with. So the last one, Lana, I saved for you here again, because consumer science. When I first saw that on the list, I'm like, I get the concept consumer, but I'm like, I need some help understanding this. So help me understand how it applies to a learning experience.
Yes, and this is really one that if you don't consider the consumer science, this is where things can kind of fall apart. This can be a game changer. If you consider through the lens what your learner is thinking as far as what's competing for their time, their energy, these are purchasing decisions. And so you have competition. We've already talked a little bit about the text message coming in. There is competition to your learner's time, their focus, their energy. And if you put yourself in their shoes and try to think through what the competition is, how you're going to sell this learning opportunity, what kind of internal marketing are you going to use? How are you going to get in front of your target audience so that they can actually have the learning and complete it? Those kind of questions are pretty critical because, I mean, how many times do we have learning that's sitting out there that we feel pretty good as L&D professionals and it's not being utilized? And then it's a question of consumer science.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I fall victim of this a lot. So I'm like, well, it's if you build it, they'll come. Like, I made this amazing stuff. I feel great about it. Everyone should love it.
And you should be weeping.
I know. That's right.
Somewhere between joy and great deep sorrow.
But there's a lot of competition out there for what I made for them. And I, to all your points, am I marketing it correctly? Am I minimizing distractions? That's a great way to think about it. And I'd not really ever heard it phrased in that kind of language.
Selling sounds harsh, but there's a transaction that takes place. I'm going to give you something and you're going to give me something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the transaction.
Yeah.
And so we give people something and we're not always cognizant of the fact that they're also giving us something, which is the gift of their time, their attention. They're doing a cost benefit analysis.
Right.
And if this isn't benefiting me, the cost of my time is too high. And so I this is really a fascinating one, and it's a little slippery.
It is.
It's
slippery.
A little slippery because you go, no, it's learning. This shouldn't have anything to do with. Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. There's a transaction taking place, and if you're not upholding your side of the transaction, well, then don't expect the learner to uphold their side.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if anybody caught on here. There's one learning science we haven't mentioned yet, and it normally would come at the very top of the list, right? Like instructional design. Where's instructional design? Why are we waiting till the end? Shouldn't that be number one? And I just, we saved it last for a reason. In my mind, I sort of have, you know, a picture of basically taking into account all of these other sciences first, and they inform then the instructional strategies that I'm going to use once I've taken the time to really think through all of these things. And so that's one of the reasons that we left it for the end was really, it's important, but we also understand as L&D professionals, those of you that are listening, you probably got this nailed, but you maybe don't have it nailed kind of like you thought you did if you're not allowing these other sciences to inform what you're thinking and doing.
So instructional design is a meta science made up of a bunch of other subsets of things.
It could be a way you think of it that way.
That's kind of how I think of it. Yeah. Like if you're going to be a highly successful instructional designer who really changes the way people think and behave, all of these other subsets have to, so it's, let's call it instructional design, the meta science.
I'm pretty sure if we have any actual scientists or, listening, we could be in trouble on
we
that.
Could but say I, mega. Is mega way. Better?
That's
Do you
better,
like mega
sure.
better?
Yes.
I mean, honestly, if you take psychology out of instructional design, you have a significantly lower chance of actually achieving the objectives that you've set out to achieve, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I found myself, Jerry, wanting to reach. So Jerry is very well known for the whiteboard and the markers. Like he does a great job of illustrating things. And I really needed one there. I was trying to think of a picture. So you painted it well with our new mega science.
There we
also made a new term, I think.
Yeah, mega science.
Yeah. All right. Well, we need to wrap up. So we've laid on the science pretty thick here. Mm-hmm. And one of Jerry's favorite phrases is be bright, be bold, and be brief or be gone. So
that's the harsher way of saying it. But, yeah, okay,
depending on the audience,
one might be assumed. So,
all right. So if you catch episode 2, we're actually going to look at the other 3 elements we addressed earlier that the modern L&D professional needs to consider, which is creativity, innovation, technology, and then data, analytics, measurement, that kind of thing. So we're going to take a look at that in episode 2. But again, I just want to give you a little preview. We're heading into the holidays. We're going to have some fun episodes where we discuss how to explain what we do to your Uncle Ted or whoever your favorite family member is, and a bonus episode, what to buy your favorite
learning. Knowing that he's also drinking a beer and watching football, right? So he's highly distracted.
That's right.
He doesn't really ask mean.
No.
So what do
he
you
do?
He
doesn't really want to know.
No.
No. Yeah. And we're going to do a bonus episode, too, of what to buy your favorite learning and development professional. So look for some fun episodes, too. Thank you all for listening. Again, we know your time is a gift, and we thank you for choosing to spend it with us. Make sure to comment, like, and rate us on whatever podcast platform you're listening to.
Thanks again for tuning in to the Learning Well podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please leave some feedback on whatever platform you're streaming on. We'd really appreciate it. We'll see you in the next episode.